We are the Cat's Whiskers, and this is My Top Line. Welcome to our latest edition of My Top Line. My name is Jonathan Bullard, and I'm delighted to say that our guest on this edition is none other than Panthers match night announcer, Dave Steph Litchfield. How are you, Dave?
I'm very well, thank you, Jono. Very kind of you to invite me onto this.
Oh, pleasure to have you on. We're really looking forward to hearing your lineup from, what is it, 40 years of watching the Panthers now?
Yeah, afraid so.
So plenty to go at there. So just before we get started, as I mentioned, you are known as Steph. Why are you called Steph when your name's David?
Well, for those who can remember back far enough, there used to be a guy who used to play for Streatham called Gary Stephan, an extremely good player, a thorn in our side. But apparently he and I bore something of a resemblance. So in those days, I was the scorer on game nights, and you had to take the game sheet into the two dressing rooms after the game to get them signed by the captain. And I walked into the Panthers dressing room, and Gavin Fraser sat there, and he goes, "Oh, look, it's Gary Stephan." And it sort of stuck since then. So everybody started calling me Steph.
And 40 years later, they're still doing it.
They still do, yeah. Which is fine by me. I don't mind being compared to such a great player.
Like me being compared to Ty Domi, but we'll move on from that. Can you remember your first game?
Oh, yes. My first game was the first game that Panthers in the modern era started back, September 1980, when they played Solihull. Unfortunately, I got there just a little bit late, so I missed the first goal. But, yeah, that was the first game I went to, 800 or so people there. And as so often happens to people when they go to watch the first game of hockey, I was hooked.
And I'm led to believe that you actually had an original era Panther as your next door neighbour.
Well, yes, the original Panthers folded the year I was born. So my formative years, there was no hockey to speak of. Certainly not in Nottingham and not really in the country. But my childhood home, one of our neighbours was Dave Ritchie, who used to play for the Panthers in the 1950s. And I was mates with his oldest son, who was also called David. And me, David and another lad one day, we were around at the Ritchie's house, and we went into his shed in the back garden. And there in the corner, hidden behind a load of stuff, was a load of old hockey equipment. There were some sticks, some pucks, a couple of shirts. One I remember was a blue one with a big A on the front, which I think might have been Altrincham, I'm not sure, and a set of goalie pads. So we thought, well, let's have a game of ice hockey on the back lawn. So we went out. I put the goalie pads on, which, because I was about 9 years old at the time, came right up to my waist. They were the old-fashioned leather pads, stuffed with horsehair, weighed an absolute ton. I could hardly move in them. And was also fascinated by the pucks, because, you know, I'm used to games being played with a ball of some description, and you've got this little black rubber disc. I've never seen anything like it before. And of course, it doesn't slide very well on grass, but we still managed a game of some description. And it's something that sort of stuck with me for many years afterwards. And on the World of Sport in those days, they used to have a little half-hour hockey slot of NHL ice hockey, which I used to sit and watch. And my dad would be sat there in his chair saying, "Oh, it's not the same as watching it live." And then one day he came home from work with the Evening Post, says there's going to be ice hockey at the stadium on Saturday. And that was the first game, the Solihull game.
And you have a unique perspective on every home game. You've been the announcer for many, many years, starting back at the old stadium. You often say how much of a privilege it is, but it does give you that sort of different perspective on the game that probably your ordinary fan doesn't have.
It's very much a privilege, because myself and Dee, we get to walk round the two dressing rooms before the game to get all the team lineups and things like that. So we get to at least get on nodding or speaking terms with opposition players, and particularly the coaches. Fascinating conversations with them. You also get the sort of the bustle of changing rooms, getting ready for a game. So you've got the skates being sharpened, you've got the sticks being prepared and taped, you've got hockey gloves on the dryer with that unique smell.
Yeah, I know very well. It's not pleasant.
It's not pleasant, but it's in some way addictive, isn't it, really? It's you're getting ready for a hockey game when you can smell the gloves drying. And then, of course, we go around to the referees' room, so we get to know the referees quite well. So, yes, it is a slightly different perspective, perhaps, to what you get upstairs. But I've been privileged to meet a lot of people over the years, famous and well-known people, and it's something I value very much.
Of course, from that perspective, though, being a fan as long as you have been, you can't really show the excitement. You must have some real inner turmoil when something exciting happens, and you have to keep that level head. I remember Paul Barham writing in an article many years ago after one of our playoff wins, and he did mention you saying that there you were just calmly gathering your notes together, putting your pen away, when really you probably wanted to jump, shout and cheer with the rest of us.
I don't know. I've kind of got used to it now, Jono. It's there's been some pretty big occasions over the years. But your first thought when there's sort of like a big goal or something like that is you've got to be looking at the clock to get the time. And then you've got to start waiting for the referee to come over and tell you who scored the goal and the assists and things like that. And it sort of becomes a bit second nature. So you might do perhaps sometimes a little bit of a fist pump or something under the table, but it's not like being a fan anymore. It's a long time since I went to a game as a fan, and you know, Dee will confirm I don't get very excited during games.
Okay, well, let's move on to your line.
That's tongue in cheek, by the way.
Yeah, I thought it might be. So we'll move on to your line, and for anyone who's listened to previous versions of my top line, we're just going to do this one slightly differently, because you've been good enough to not only send us your players, but you've also done honourable mentions for each position and for also the categories as well. So we're just going to shuffle it about a bit for all the regular listeners. So if it's not the same as normal, it is a special one we're doing for a very special guest. So, Steph, who is your netminder?
Okay, for my netminder, I have chosen Dave Randall.
It's Dave Randall, who was in that very first season as the Panthers returned to the Ice Stadium in 1980. A very difficult man to get some stats on, but thanks to Michael Chambers' scrapbook, we did get something. We had him at 14 games with a goals against average of 5.91, a save percentage of 85%. So, anybody listening to them figures would just think that isn't very good. So please do explain why Dave Randall makes your lineup.
Well, from what I knew about ice hockey before I started going to watch it, he was the perfect embodiment of my idea of a hockey goalie. He was of indeterminate age. I mean, as part of this exercise, Mick Holland kindly contacted a couple of the original Panthers to ask them how old Randall was. And they didn't know. They thought he was in his 40s, but they weren't absolutely sure. But he did have, a contemporary playing in the league at that time, who was Glyn Thomas, who was Streatham's goalie. And he was in his 40s, about 43, 44, and still playing. Randall was, he was a big guy. When he stood in the goal, he didn't leave much to aim at. He wasn't very mobile. He very rarely came more than about 6 feet out of his crease. There was none of this stick handling that we've got used to today and going around the back of the goal to collect the puck. Unusually, he wore number 2, which is not a usual number for a goalkeeper to wear. But I think the most memorable thing of his sort of makeup, if you like, which is scarcely believable these days, is that he didn't wear a helmet. A goalkeeper not wearing a helmet. All he had was one of the old-fashioned sort of plastic fiberglass face masks with the holes in it for his eyes and his mouth, which gave him a bit of a ghoulish appearance.
The sort of Friday the 13th look.
Yes, yeah, and it looked far too small to be of any use. And then he got these elastic straps that sort of held it on his face, and all his hair stuck up through these elastic straps. And the sort of the final ingredient, if you like, was his lack of words, I suppose. He wasn't here all that long, but I never spoke to him. never saw any sort of interview or quote from him in the press. And to this day, I know nothing about him as a person. He came in the first season. I think he originated from Solihull. He was the main goalie with a very young Chris Keywood was coming up as backup at the time. We then signed a guy called Tim Ingram, who people might remember, came and played as a forward, and then he switched to playing goal, which is another, I mean, you can't imagine a player doing that these days. And he was a very good goalie. So Randall ended up sharing the backup duties with Chris Keywood. And then the following season, we signed Frankie Killen. He ended up forming the gold tending tandem with Chris Keywood, and Dave Randall by November 81, it finished. His last game in which he actually played was that game, the game when we beat Southampton 31-2. And then he dressed 14th of November against Billingham, and then he left.
Because he was mentioned as actually playing for Solihull a few times later on. So he would have been even older. He'd probably been like sort of 45 when he was playing for them.
I think that's where he originally came from. We signed a couple of other guys from Solihull as well, Paul O'Higgins. But I'm not sure about Dave Rand, but certainly Glyn Thomas at Streatham. He had played for Wembley Lions in the 50s, so he was a throwback to the original era. Whether Dave Randall was as well, I don't know. He was just my sort of... He had the big old-fashioned horsehair pads that I've already referred to, which the goalies used to have in those days, which, of course, you were sliding around on the ice during the game. They used to get wet and absorb the water and get heavier and heavier, which, of course, might be why he didn't move around all that much. But it was a bit of a character.
OK, well, we'll leave Dave Randall there, but you did give us some honourable mentions as regards netminders who played for the Panthers, and you've seen a few. So who were the other netminders that really caught your eye?
Well, the honourable mentions really is obviously Craig Kowalski, who I think is probably the best goalie I've seen in the 40 years since we started back. Trevor Robbins was also an outstanding goalie. I think Mike Garnett did a great job for us, particularly in the Champions League campaign. Also, just a quick mention, Kevin St-Pierre as well. Any time you sign a goalie with nine fingers, that's worth a mention.
Yeah. And another decent netminder as well. It's quite interesting because when we started this, we did say that we thought that the picks for netminder would either be Craig Kowalski or Trevor Robbins. You're the fourth Panthers fan we've had on this, and it's been four different netminders.
I did think when you embarked on this exercise that it would probably end up being Kowalski or Robbins all the way through. So it's quite good that we're getting a variety, I think.
We certainly are. Before we move on to your defenceman, we're going to have a look at your favourite game in all those 40 years of watching the Nottingham Panthers. So, Steph, what is your favourite game?
Well, as my favourite game, I have chosen the home Champions League game against Bern.
Yes, on the 2nd of September 2017, Panthers taking on Bern in the group stages of the Champions Hockey League, and Panthers with an incredible 4-2 victory after being 2-0 down. Alexander Mokshantev with two, Jeff Brown and Robert Lakovic empty net goal sealing the deal. So why particularly that game?
Well, as you've alluded to already, we were beyond massive underdogs. I mean, Bern were the third seed, I think, in the competition that year.
Yes, yeah, something like that.
We were the bottom seed. They regularly play in front of crowds of 16,000-17,000, one of the most financially powerful teams in Europe, maybe even in the world. They got players playing for them who individually paid more than our entire squad. I was actually not at work that day. I was at home and I was in the garden, and this plane went over, and I thought, what's that? Had a look at it on my little app on my phone, and it was a private jet coming in from Turku, and it was them. They were flying in on a private jet. And then with this perspective that we've already talked about, we went round before the game, and I mean, what a professional setup they were. They got such an enormous entourage with them, all doing all different jobs. Very, very serious-minded coaching staff. Their fans, of course, made for quite an atmosphere up there in the top corner. And then we went 2-0 down. And you know, from that situation to come back and beat them 4-2 was, I thought, possibly the most remarkable achievement of the Panthers since we reformed in 1980. And it was just so, it took me days to come down from that one, Johnny.
Unfortunately, a game I didn't get to because I was working, which is a real shame. So I didn't. I'd been to the Mountfield game on the Thursday, and they couldn't make the Burn game. So I was watching it on my phone because I had the Premier Sports app. I just remember watching it and just being totally gobsmacked as it turned around. I do remember as that empty netter went in, I was waiting to go and collect some equipment, and I must admit a little tear did escape from my eye.
I was a bit emotional as well at the end of that one, I have to say.
But I think it's not only the comeback, but some of the goals in that game were just phenomenal.
Yes, and one of them's in my honourable mentions, a favourite goal, but the skill...
We'll mention it now as it's relevant.
I watched it today. Mokshantsev's second goal. It's the one where Delago was out on the board at point and got the puck into the centre of the ice, and then Phillips and Mokshantsev did a superb tic-tac-toe movement which unlocked one of the premier defences in Europe and left Mokshantsev with an empty goal to shoot into. It's just a fantastic piece of skill. Wonderful moment. Oh, yeah, never forget that.
And then, of course, you had Jeff Brown skating the length of the ice and perfect rich shot in.
And Mokshantsev's first goal as well. I mean, that was another one where he turned on his backhand and completely wrong-footed the defender and got the puck in. It was an evening of tremendous skill from both sides and tremendous tension, because of course when we went 3-2 up, there was still about 12 minutes to play, wasn't there, something like that, that we had to hold out for. Yeah, what a night.
And of course you've other games that have caught your eye, and I did notice you didn't mention the Turku game, which was later on that season where Panthers won 2-0 to secure a place in the knockout stages of the Champions Hockey League. That must have been another pretty special night as well.
Well, yes, not least because it was a shutout. And again, a moment of brilliance from Mokshantsev with his second goal that night as well. Mm-hmm. And to at the end of that, when we realised that we'd not just qualified, but we'd won the group. I mean, what an achievement that was. It was just absolutely fantastic. And I think the Turku game, was it 0-0 after two periods? I can't remember.
No, it was two goals at the end of the second period, I think. Very close. I seem to remember they were very close together.
Yeah, yeah. But yes, I mean, that was another memorable night. I mean, I've got that Turku game in my honourable mentions for my favourite moment.
Yeah.
It's difficult fitting things in on all of this exercise, you know, Johnny.
But there's a few other games you mentioned as well. So what are the other ones that got you excited over?
Yeah, I mean, obviously in 40 years, there have been some fantastic games and like the league winning game, the cup wins, the playoff wins. But the two that I picked out, first one was a game in 1988 at home against Fife. 88-89 was the season when Alex Dampier had his big experiment with the Panthers of two defencemen, import defencemen and one import forward. But Fife were also having a bit of an experiment because they bucked the trend at that time of signing North American imports. And that season they signed three Czechs, Figala, Kokromont and Vincent Lukac. And this game against Fife was the first time that we saw them in Nottingham. And at the end of the second period, we were winning 3-2, close game. Came out in the third, Lukac scored a hat-trick in 6 minutes, one of which was a rink-length dash. Nobody could get the puck off him. So they were 5-3 up. And we then scored two goals in a minute to make it 5-all. And then we had 11 minutes of hockey, where there were no penalties, very few face-offs. It was just up and down, up and down. Goalmouth scrambles, chances, great saves, the crowd going mad. And in the end, it finished 5-all. and both the teams went round and did a lap of honour at the end. It was a really, really memorable game. And then the other one, honourable mention, was the legendary Murrayfield abandonment, January 1986. This was a high point for me. This was Alex's first season when he was looking to get rid of this Pussycats tag that we'd had. And we just went round the league that year, led from the front by Jimmy Keyes, taking no prisoners, basically. And it all came to a bit of a climax this night, because Murrayfield are one of the top teams, no doubt about that. And with about 6 or 7 minutes to go, we were winning 10-2, helped greatly by the fact that the referee had seen fit to give us 12 power plays during the game. And so, you know, Murrayfield weren't in a very good mood, to say the least. Their captain, Calland, had been thrown out on an unsportsmanlike conduct. And with 5 minutes to go, this fight started in the corner, which involved everybody on the ice. We'd also got two Murrayfield guys in the penalty box with us, two Panthers guys on the other side. I was sitting watching this fight going on, and these two Murrayfield guys came skating past me and jumped in the other, you know, the Panthers penalty box, and it all started in there as well. Ken Bullock, who was a referee at the time, he was in the crowd. He came down and was trying to break up the fight in the penalty box, and they weren't going to stop on the ice. So the referee just skated over to me, says, "I'm abandoning the game," and off he went and left him to it. You ought to think in those days, Jono, in the old rink, the crowd, there was nothing between the crowd and the penalty box. There was no glass, no netting.
Only netting at the ends, wasn't there, at that time? I seem to remember.
I think at that time there wasn't even any netting around apart from behind the goals. I think that came later. So all of this stuff in the penalty box was going on at the feet of the front row of the fans. And, you know, the potential for major disorder, which thankfully didn't happen. But that was a night when we really signalled that we weren't going to take any nonsense. And of course, a month later, we had the bench clearer with air.
Mm. I was going to say, there was two bench clearances that season.
Just the most fantastic season, John. There would never be another season like that, you know. We just didn't know what was going to happen from one game to the next.
Of course, another bench clearance that you've not mentioned in your favourite games, but took place in the first season at the NIC, was, of course, the famous game against Sheffield. And I can only imagine you didn't put that down because of the amount of paperwork that you probably had to do with regards to that one.
Well, that the paperwork on that one was for D to sort out. And yes, there was a lot of it. Yes, I mean, that was another pretty memorable evening. I mean, we've only had a couple of these bench clearers in all the time I've been on the bench. And the thing about that one was that at one point we had Nicar and Vial. They were up against the glass right in front of me. You know, I was literally a couple of feet away from him. And you see two big guys like that, at close quarters like that, going at it, it's a pretty frightening sight, to be honest.
Mm-hmm. I can imagine it is, even though with that thick bit of plexiglass in between you, I can imagine it can be quite unnerving at times. Mm. Okay, we shall move on to your defensive pairing now. So, Steph, let us know who is defenseman number one for you.
My first defence choice is Jimmy Pack.
Jimmy Pack, the twice Stanley Cup winner with the Pittsburgh Penguins, who came to the Nottingham Panthers in 2000, played 123 games over two spells with 6 goals and 42 assists in his Panthers career. So, Steph, he's a player who has been chosen before, but why particularly have you chosen Jimmy Pack?
Well, I think it mainly for the same reasons that previous people have said. He was a classy, confident, wonderful, smooth skating defenceman. He was a leader, a credit to the club. We've got a guy with 2 Stanley Cups playing for the Panthers, which is scarcely believable. So there's not really much I can add as to reasons why, from the point of view of playing, that he should be chosen, because it speaks for itself, really. But there's a couple of little background stories, if you like. There's a regular saying that people remember where they were on the day that President Kennedy was shot. Well, I can remember where I was when I found out we'd signed Jimmy Pack. because I was at the shops on, at the top of Carlton Hill getting a lawnmower repaired. And I wandered down to the news agent and I walked in, and there was a pile of Evening Posts there, which for some reason, fortuitously, had been stacked with the back page uppermost, not the front page. And there was this enormous headline on the back page, Panthers sign pack. And I just sort of stood and looked at this, and I couldn't believe it. And I bought the paper, obviously, and took it outside. And I was reading this report that we'd signed Jimmy Pack. And as I've said, he's a guy with two Stanley Cups. I can remember watching him on the telly playing for Pittsburgh, a powerhouse Pittsburgh team, winning the two Stanley Cups. And he stood out a bit because he was the only Korean player in the NHL. And he was a good player, and he was coming to play for us, which was just staggering. And the other thing about him, I think it was last season or the season before, he came back for a visit, didn't he? And he was introduced on the ice.
Yeah.
And before while he was waiting to be introduced, he was downstairs, and he came into our little room that we've got down there for the off-ice officials. And he just came in and he was just chatting with us for 10 or 15 minutes about hockey, about family, his family and things like that. Just such a normal, humble, really, really nice bloke. So there we are. We've got this twice Stanley Cup winner, a successful national team coach, and he's just standing there chatting with us. What a wonderful man and a wonderful player.
I will second that. Having met him on a couple of occasions, he is a genuinely, genuinely nice guy. Okay, let's move on to your second choice. So who is defenceman number two?
The second choice is Terry Kurtenbach.
Terry Kurtenbach, a popular choice in my top line. 7 seasons for the Panthers, 6 as captain, 356 games for 290 goals, 432 assists for 722 points. A proper Panthers legend. So why particularly have you chosen Terry Kurtenbach?
Well, again, he's been selected before. People have said things, much of which I echo. So I'll just basically read out my little notey things that I've written down here about him. Classy, unflustered, logged lots of ice time. He wasn't overly physical. He certainly wasn't a fighter, but if the occasion demanded it, he could properly stand up for himself and for his playing colleagues as well. He brought an attacking dimension to his play, very good on the rush, and he was very rarely injured. 7 seasons, 6 as captain. What a great player.
A real legend, won trophies with the Panthers. As I've already mentioned, 6 of his seasons he was captain. And the question I'll ask others who've chosen him, and I'll ask you the same question, do you feel his number 9 shirt should have been retired?
I've got to say, I'm not a massive one on shirt retirements, but if you measure his achievements against the shirts which have been retired, then probably, yes, I think it should be.
Like you say, he was from an era where we only had 3 imports playing for the team. He was part of 2 defencemen in the 1989 playoff winning side, along with Doc Dirdle and Paul Adey as the forward. And I remember the few times that I went to the Ice Stadium at that time to watch a game, and also when I used to watch the odd game on Grandstand. He was the sort of player whose transition was just incredible. He'd pick the puck up in the defensive zone, go straight through neutral ice into the attacking zone and find the net. And it was a common occurrence. And his stats really sort of reflect that with the amount of points and goals that he scored.
Yeah, agree totally. I mean, he was a dominant player for us. It's also the unusual, slightly unusual thing is, at that time, imports used to change quite regularly and quite rapidly. And we went through a period there where we had Kurtenbach and Paul Adey, played with us for 7 seasons, Adey for even longer. That was a bit unusual at that time, and it gave us a really good stability, which was welcome.
Let's have a look at some of your honourable mentions in defence. And again, quite a few to go through. So who are your honourable mentions?
Yeah, well, I mean, I shan't talk at great length about all of them. Nick Boynton's one. We in the lockout season, I think we got the best player there. Yeah. Bona fide all-star. Didn't play that many games for us, but was outstanding. Garth Brimack.
Boynton left us and went on to win a Stanley Cup with Chicago.
Yes, exactly. Garth Premack was another, a bit like Kurtenbach, a leader, captain, solid, dominant defenceman, did a great job for us. Corey Nielsen, well, you know, you got to put him in, really, haven't you? I've also got some British ones. Steve Lee, certainly, for the early years when he played for us, was possibly the best British defenceman in the league, or one of the best. And still a really good player, in my opinion. Graham Waghorn, loved Wags, very emotional, intense, physical player, wore his heart on his sleeve, but did a really good job for us. Terry Gudzunas, difficult to underestimate the impact he had when he came to play for us, because I don't think we'd seen anybody who could skate like him. And then he coupled that with a really pretty fierce slap shot, and he could play forward or defence, so that was good. And then one final one I just wanted to really mention, John Brenner. You know, he was with us for years, but the thing about him was he was a defenceman most of the time, but then Alex converted him into a forward, and this was at the time when it used to be the rule on icing, it used to be touch icing, so you get defenders chasing the puck back to their end of the ice to touch it up for icing, with a forward inevitably chasing them and banging them into the boards for their trouble. And of course, when Brem got converted to a forward, he took great delight in returning that for two or three seasons, smashing opposition defencemen into the board as they'd been doing to him all those years. So good for you, Brem.
Okay, before we move on to your forward choices, I'm going to ask you, who is the opposition player who you would love to have seen play for the Panthers?
My choice in this category is Ivan Matulik.
Ivan Matulik played for four teams throughout his career in England, starting at Sheffield and also played in Edinburgh, Cardiff and Manchester. Only won the one playoff title, which is surprising when I was looking at what he won here while he was here, because he was pretty much a staple of those Cardiff sides.
Yeah, Matulik was a big, barrel-chested, bustling forward. He was a fantastic skater and stick handler. He knew where the goal was. He could set up plays. And he was really strong physically in the physical battles. Very, very, very intense player. You know, when he used to come and sit a penalty in the penalty box, you couldn't have any sort of a conversation with him. He was totally in the zone. He had these extraordinary eyes, like ice chips. Very, very bright, vivid blue eyes that just used to look straight through you. And I just thought he was a fantastic player. I really would have liked to have seen him at Nottingham at some point.
He played for quite a few teams. Of course, he came in Sheffield Steelers' first season in British League, or the top division anyway. And he really did stand out.
Yes, yes. And there's that famous occasion when he had a coming together with Paul Adey, and they had a fight. It was in Nottingham. Both got sent off for a five-minute penalty. And when they came back on, they went straight back at it again. and I've been lucky enough, I've been able to, you know, have a chat with Paul about that. And he was telling me just how strong Matulik was. He was a real handful. Plus, of course, he wasn't averse to pulling his hair as well.
Yes,
Paul had quite long hair at the time. And of course, Paul said to me, he says, well, you know, when you're in a fight, you have to do what you can to gain an advantage. He didn't particularly feel any malice towards Matulik for doing that.
Because he did cause heartbreak for Panthers in a playoff final in Manchester when he was playing for the Cardiff Devils, scoring both goals in a 2-1 victory, one of those shorthanded. Yeah. And that really just showed the sort of player that he was.
Yes.
OK, we will leave Ivan Matulik there, who we never got to see in the black and gold. But we'll talk about some forwards who we did. And we'll start with forward number one. So who is your first forward?
First forward, Paul Adey.
Paul Adey, of course, 11 seasons as a player with the Panthers, 4 as a coach. As a player, won 4 Autumn Cups and a playoff title and a Challenge Cup as coach of the Panthers. So, why poor lady?
Well, he was a legend. Anyway, should we move on to the next one? No, Paul, it's longevity, because he was with us for 11 seasons. He got something like 1,500 points, I think he said, something like that. Mm. He was part of the sort of experiment, as it was, of the sole import forward, in which role he scored 88 goals, nearly 50 games for Great Britain. Consummate professional, wonderful player. Gave Nottingham a lot of great moments, and just very, very happy to have been able to watch him for all those years.
And I think one of the things with AD as well is he transgressed over different eras of the British game. He started in the British League as one of three imports, but he managed to adapt his game where he was still one of the top players when we had the pretty import-laden Super League.
Yes, he obviously racked up a lot of goals and assists in the old British League. But even when we went over to the Super League, he was still scoring at, what, about a point a game, something like that. Yeah. Still making a major contribution. So, yes, he did. There's not many players have sort of crossed over like he did.
And, of course, he had his shirt retired. He became our coach. And I remember when it was announced that he was going to become our head coach, there was an awful lot of excitement, because it was almost as if the hero was returning home.
Yeah, I mean, I happen to think he was a pretty good coach. I think he got a little bit of a rough deal here in Nottingham, and which he showed, because he then went off to Belfast and won the league. But I think now he's more enjoying his career as a media pundit, really, probably a lot less stressful.
Yeah, and having had the pleasure to commentate with him on a game, he's a great guy to work with as well.
One great thing about thing about AD, which was probably quite a legendary thing, was his first weekend in Scotland, which I'm sure you know all about.
Yeah.
Or have heard all about, he'd only been here about 2 or 3 weeks, went up to Scotland. First game, he got thrown out after 2 periods. The second game at Murrayfield the following night, he lasted 6 minutes and 9 seconds, of which 4 minutes was spent serving penalties, had 2 fights, got chucked out of the game. And we're all thinking, what on earth have we signed here? But of course, he laid down a marker with that weekend, because nobody really bothered him after that, and he could just get on and play his game.
Mm. I think he said something very similar to that as to why he did it. He just, as you say, wanted to lay down a marker. And I suppose that allowed him to become the player that he did.
Yeah, but having said that, I don't think Paul was averse to a fight, you know. I think he quite enjoyed it. Paul would most definitely stand up for himself in a big way. There's no doubt about that.
So we'll leave Paul Ady there and we'll go on to your second forward. So, Steph, who's your second choice?
Second choice is David Clarke.
David Clarke, British forward, 14 seasons with the Panthers and won 14 trophies in that time. 7 Challenge Cups, 5 playoffs, 1 Elite League title and 1 Continental Cup. 799 games, 393 goals, 384 assists for 777 points in all competitions. So the numbers are there, the trophies are there, but why particularly have you chosen David Clarke?
Well, as you say, the numbers, the trophies, the points, they're all there. One of the reasons is that so many of his goals were big goals, the big moments. I think particularly now the goal he scored in Belfast in the league-winning game, that was at quite a crucial point in the game. And I think prior to that, he'd had a fight, hadn't he, as well, in that
he
game?
He had, yeah.
So probably leading. Sport. Properly leading from the front, he was a leader, he was a captain for a number of seasons, did a tremendous job for us over a long period of time. And also the other reason I've picked him, of course, is to maintain good relations with Dee.
He was the consummate British forward, was the top point scorer in the Elite League, and that title was taken from him by Colin Shields, another fabulous player. But he just gave us a point-scoring British forward, which are pretty rare, it has to be said. He was import quality.
Yes, he was. His goal scoring, in his pomp, he was getting 25, 30, 40, even 40 goals a season for us. That's a big contribution from a British player, and something that maybe we started to take a little bit for granted as time went on. But he was a very important player for us. And although I sort of do a bit downstairs, as it were, before games, what I do see, he was quite big around the dressing room as well, which fans don't always see. A key part of the team for many years.
Another thing, you mentioned what a consummate professional Paul Ady was, but David Clark was very much cut from the same cloth.
Yeah, absolutely.
Okay, let's head on to the third forward, and someone who's not, surprisingly really, not been picked before in my top line. So, Steph, who's forward number three?
My choice for third forward is Randall Weber.
Randall Weber, what a player. 16 seasons, 4 Autumn Cups, 1 playoff title in that time. An incredible 843 appearances, 326 goals, 515 assists for 841 points and 516 penalty minutes. So, Steph, why Randall Weber?
Well, players like Randall Weber, I think every team has to have a player like Randall to be a successful team. In a similar mould is Matthew Myers, British players who perhaps they're not going to win your team's scoring title every season. They might not do all the fancy dipsy-doodle plays. They might not be fighters, but they make such a huge contribution just on a steady, regular basis, the sort of reliable players who you can put out there and you know what they're going to do and they will do it. Most seasons, he didn't miss many games through injury at all. He would always chip in with a reasonable number of goals, didn't take too many penalties, and he did that over 16-17 seasons. I mean, it's scarcely believable now that a player could do that.
I mean, there's another player who made the transition from the British League to the Super League, but yes. I think we all remember that game in Manchester in the Cup where he scored a power play shorthanded and even-handed goal hat-trick.
You took the words right out of my mouth, Jono. Thank you very much. Yes, that's right. I remember that. I was there. Tremendous performance, and that just shows the versatility of this player, that he was out there on the power play and shorthanded scoring goals.
And things, he was a real epitome of a team guy as well. He would do whatever role that whatever coach wanted him to do. If they wanted him to score, he'd score. If they wanted him to penalty kill, he'd penalty kill. If they wanted him to shut up shop, he'd shut up shop. A real utility player.
Yes, yeah, absolutely. Also, I think that sometimes the description of somebody as a utility player is sometimes can be seen as a bit, well, not derogatory, but you know what I mean? It's not like a star player, but to me, Randall was a star player. You know, he was there for many, many seasons doing a terrific job, and I'm really glad I saw him play.
So that is your lineup chosen. So in goal, we've got Dave Randall. In defence, Jimmy Pack and Terry Kurtenbach. And the forwards are Paul Ady, David Clark and Randall Weber. Quite happy with that? You think they'd give anyone a game?
I hope Dave's not listening to this, but I think if he was in goal, we'd be conceding double figures every game.
Well, the standard as it is now.
but I don't care because he was a character.
And that's the entire reason that we ask you to pick these players. Yeah. Okay, just before we move on to our final two categories, just the honourable mentions that you have for the forward line. So who did almost make it into those three forward positions?
Yeah, we'll quickly run through these, really. David Ling, we knew we got somebody special the moment he took a swig out the Dundee goalie's water bottle. you know, what a player. Matthew Myers, who we've already mentioned, really love Matthew, terrific player. Jay Galbraith, I know some people didn't like him, but I loved watching him. Fantastic,
skillful player.
Oh yeah, I mean he probably could have played at a high level, but I think Jade played for fun. He enjoyed playing hockey. And unfortunately, that frustrated some people. Johan Molin, not the biggest of players, but he could rattle around in front of the goal with the best of them. The thing about Moline, I can remember it, it's one of those midweek, February, rainy Tuesday night games against somebody or other, and there's about 2,000 people in, and it was a dreadful game. And I took to watching Moline when he came on the ice, just watching him skate round. His skating was a thing of beauty. It really was. The way he moved and the way he moved his skates and things, it was just fantastic to watch. Really, really beautiful. Ross Lambert, people get upset at Brendan Connolly and Bobby Farnham and players like that, but Ross Lambert, God, he used to wind people up. He was a real irritant, and it was fantastic having him playing for us. He used to have this thing when the play stopped and everybody used to stop in front of the goal, and Lambert would just not quite stop and just very gently bump into the opposition goalie, and everything would kick off and gloves up and all that. It was his stock in trade. He was great and irritant. And then the final two I want to mention, who really came as a pair, I think, Jimmy Keyes and Jamie Crapper. I'm a bit sad I couldn't get Jimmy Keyes into my actual team, because his impact on the club for the two seasons that he played was huge. He wasn't the biggest guy and he wasn't the best skater, but he was hard-nosed, wouldn't take any nonsense. And in that season when we were going around ridding ourselves of the Pussycats tag, he led from the front. He wasn't bothered who he took on. And in between all of that, he was setting up Jamie Crapper for some fantastic goals. Jamie had a ripper of a slap shot from the point. It's great signing him. Memorable season when we had those two.
We've got a couple of categories left for you to go through, and we're going to start with your favourite goal. So, Steph, your favourite goal in all the time you've been watching the Panthers?
Well, for this one, I picked Leighton Erett's overtime winner, Norwich Union Cup final 1986.
Yeah, the goal that gave Panthers their first trophy of the modern era, scored at 61-53 in overtime for a 5-4 victory, and Panthers took the cup. So why particularly that goal out of all the ones you've seen?
Well, it was our first major trophy in the modern era. It was the first time any of us had experienced a game in a proper big arena. I mean, it's only a temporary arena, but I think there's about 5,000 people there that day. Big crowd. First time we'd experienced that. It was the first time we'd experienced sudden death overtime, which was quite an experience. And it only lasted for a minute and 53 seconds. But even so, that was a first for us. But then there's other things as well as winning the cup. You know, after we'd all calmed down, we went back and got on the coach to come back to Nottingham. And there were some Fife fans came on the coach, you know, saying well done, shaking hands and things like that, which, of course, is how it should be. We all got back to Nottingham. We all piled into the castle. Not far behind us came the team. They all came into the castle as well. Dave, the landlord, he'd recorded the game because it was live on Grandstand.
It was on Grandstand, yeah.
So he brought his telly down from upstairs and put it on top of a fruit machine and then plugged in his video recorder, and we all sat and watched the game again. and it was just great. We were all lying on the floor. People were coming in the pub and they couldn't get in because we were all sitting around watching the game. We all got royally drunk, which was a pity because we had a game the next day up in Durham. when we were quite handily beaten 11-2. But then at the end of the evening, Randall Webber, his mum and dad, they lived not far from where I lived at the time, offered me a lift home. They were taking the cup home for safekeeping. So we were on our way home. They decided they wanted some chips. I didn't really want any, so we stopped. They all got out and went in the chip shop and left me sat in the back of the car with the cup. what a way to end the day.
Doesn't get much better than that. What other goals were they that you've really enjoyed? I mean, we've obviously mentioned the Alexander Mokshantsev goal earlier in the programme.
Yeah, Gallivan's game-winning goal, obviously, in Belfast to win the league. There was one particular one that I wanted to mention, and I bet you nobody else will mention this one, which was a goal scored by Terry Gudzunas. We played in 1982-83 season. We had the first British League and we were up against Dundee for the first time. The mighty Dundee came to Nottingham and we had this absolutely breathtaking 7-7 draw. But partway through the game, we were on the penalty kill. And just as the penalty finished, Grzunas was serving the penalty. Just as the penalty finished, the puck came out into the neutral zone as Grzunas came out of the box. He picked it up, went down the ice on his own on a breakaway. And then he just got to the blue line and he just ripped it. And it went straight through the goalie and the roof came off the building. And it was just a fantastic moment. And yeah, she'll never forget that goal.
Great stuff. Okay, we're going to finish the show, as we always do, with your favourite moment. Now, you've got a couple, and there's one main one, but there is a secondary one, which we've already sort of talked about, but that is the Turku shutout in the CHL.
Yes, I know I had the Burn game as my most memorable game, but the Turku evening, the Turku night, was also, you know, just a famous night, because it's the significance of that win, getting us to win a Champions League group and go through to the knockout stage. But not only that, we shut them out, you know, to shut out a team from Finland. And with that game and with the Burn game as well, part of your reflection on those games when you get home and it's all quiet is you're thinking about what another game we've already talked about, which was the first game back in 1980. Mm. And you think how far we've come in that time. You know, the building that we play in now, the fact that, you know, when we first started up, the players all wore different coloured helmets and different coloured shorts and different coloured socks. The only thing they had in common was the shirt.
Mm.
And the games, when we started up, we started at 6 o'clock and they had to be off the ice by 8 for the general skating.
Mm.
Things like that, you see, and look at where we've got to now. It's just unbelievable, really, and it's fantastic. And I want to get back in the Champions League as soon as possible.
Yeah, I think we all feel like that. Just before we do come on to your favourite moment, a question I'll ask you, because we've now been 20 seasons at the Nottingham Ice Stadium and now 20 seasons at the National Ice Centre. Can you quite believe that?
I can't believe the 20 years in the Ice Centre. I don't know where that's gone.
Yeah, it does seem like yesterday since that first game against London.
Yeah, it does. It does seem to have gone quite quickly. Maybe that's because I'm getting old. I don't know. But I'll tell you something else, actually, Johnny, which surprised me a little bit when I was looking into getting ready for this, was, you know, it's 40 years now. The Super League was only 7 years out of the 40.
Yeah,
it really was almost a bit of an aberration, really.
Yeah, it's amazing when you think about it. Okay, to close a wonderful hour with yourself, what is your favourite moment?
Favourite moment, and it really was a moment, which anybody who was there will never forget, Selmar v Mike Rowe.
Yes, a stuff of legend. I was there, so I've only ever heard the story of this. But Selmar O'Delane, the Panthers' import defenceman, took on Mike Rowe of the Whitley Warriors. There was a little bit of history there. Mike Rowe, of course, went on later to become an official in the British League and the Super League, quite a well-respected referee. But Steph, tell the story of what happened.
Well, I mean, as I've already alluded, this can be classed as a moment because it was all over so quickly. Mike Rowe was an interesting character. He was hard as nails. He really was a tough, rough player, which was quite funny because I don't know if you ever met him off the ice, did you, Johnny?
I didn't, no.
No, he wore little round specs like John Lennon used to wear. Very, very quietly spoken. He had the air of a university professor. Nothing like what he was on the ice. But apparently there'd been some history because Selmar's brother was playing for Bracknell that season. And I think earlier in the season, something had happened between them. And all the talk throughout the game amongst the fans was, you know, Rowe's got to answer the bell here. So Selmar's going to take him to task. And all through the game at face-offs and things, we could see Selmar looking at Rowe and talking to him and you know, but nothing happened until right near the end of the game when the game was won, really. And eventually Rowe answered the bell. And this is how I remember it. All the players formed a circle and the two combatants were in the middle and they came together and it was bam, bam, row down in a heap on the ice. The crowd just erupted. Selmar skating around with his hands clenched above his head, you know, like a proper champion. The crowd were roaring. And then eventually Rowe got up and his legs had gone. They were wobbling all over the place. He had to be sort of helped off the ice. He'd been cut. So he got all blood down one side of his face. And when the crowd saw that, they roared. It must have been like that in the Colosseum in Rome when the gladiators were killing each other.
We often had moments like that in the Nottingham Ice Stadium where just something would happen and the roof would come off, and the atmosphere in that place was pretty special.
Oh, yes. Yeah, it was a very, very special place. The way the building was designed and built, if you like, it got that big curving roof. And the effect of that was that it drew all the sound down into the arena as people were shouting and cheering. There were no sort of posts to block the view. It was a memorable place to watch a game of ice hockey. Everybody was crammed in, smelt a bit downstairs. We had an organ in the early years. It was Eric playing his organ. Yeah. I have organ music at a hockey game. I do. Got the old-fashioned clock, which went through three periods. Do you remember that, Jono, when did you start?
I do remember the old clock before the one before the electronic scoreboard that was propped on a chair in the first game in the NIC.
Look, tell you something interesting about that clock was that it worked. You had like a little metal box, and at the start of there was like a light switch on it. And at the start of the game, you flick that light switch down and the clock would start running. And then during the period, you would put your thumb on a plunger to stop it for a face-off. And then take your thumb off and it would start again. And then at the end of the period, it would obviously buzz. At the start of the second period, you'd flick the switch back up again. And then at the start of the third period, you would flick the switch down again. But then if you didn't flick it back up again in the first 10 minutes of the third period, the buzzer would go. Because, of course, in the old days, the sides used to swap ends.
Swap it, yes.
Halfway through the third period. So if you forgot to do that, the buzzer would go halfway through the third period. And the other thing was, with the plunger, it was a really stiff thing you had to put your thumb on. And if there was a big fight or something like that, you're sat there with your thumb on this plunger and all the blood draining out of it as you're trying to keep it held down.
Those were the days. I do remember where I think someone from the stadium maintenance, the buzzer wouldn't turn off, so he had to go up with a pair of pliers and cut it off.
That was poor old Roger, that was, yeah. All the sparks of the...
with a huge bang, yeah.
Nearly electrocuted himself, didn't he?
Yeah. Oh, the great days, great days. Well, Steph, it's been an absolute pleasure to have you on my top line. Thank you very, very much for being on.
Well, thank you for listening to me wittering on, John. I really appreciate you having me on as well. Thank you, and I hope everybody listening enjoyed it as well.
I'm sure they will. Thank you very much. And thank you very much to you for listening to my top line. We will be back again very soon with another edition. But until then, thanks very much and goodbye.